Nice to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you along for another look at computers with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Before we get to that, I want to say a big thanks to all the Wisconsin Public Radio contributors who were at our home this weekend. We had a wonderful time visiting with people, and it was a boy Saturday, Peter Green. It was a perfect day to be outside.
I think it was probably the most picture-perfect day in Wisconsin in a very long time.
I couldn't believe it. It was an absolutely beautiful day, and it was so much fun being able to talk to everybody and ask questions, answer questions, and just it was just a good time. Hope we can do that again another year. And I hope we can get some questions from you if you want to join in at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Please give us a call. And, oh, I should also mention, I think we're going to put some of the photos up from that event either on our blog or probably on our blog, but probably also on our Wisconsin Public Radio website. We have a construction blog, as you know, Pete.
How many megapixels?
I don't know. they are very crisp. We've got a pretty expensive camera. Jared in Fitchburg, your turn. Hi, Jared.
Hello.
Hi.
I have an old PC that has Windows 98 on it, and I want to get rid of it. And one of the things I'm concerned about is eliminating all the files that are on it. Have you got any suggestions on what to do that?
Well, you could do a complete reinstall the operating system. Is it? Do you have disks that came with the computer that, for example, Compaq, HP, Dell, a number of the companies give you a CD that's here
yeah.
to reinstall it from scratch?
I may have that. I'm not.
Well, that's
sure.
one. That's one option. That would just completely wipe out and essentially, make your PC like it was just delivered to you. So that's so that's one option. Another option. There are freeware, shareware programs out there that are called shredders.
Shredders.
Yeah. Probably if you look for shredders or privacy shredders, they.
That
would be one way of still, using the computer and using the software to, to eliminate, files that you just want completely gone. Another option would be to use the operating system underneath Windows 98, which is talking through, if you want to call the version of DOS, but there's a the partitioning
Yes.
command is called fdisk.
Yes, I've used fdisk, but
yeah.
I didn't know if I could.
There's actually a website, and I believe it's fdisk.com that documents how to use that. And I've also got that. If you do a search on my website, infostar.com, on fdisk, you'd probably come up with a couple of links that talk about it. But what you do with fdisk is you basically remove the partition. And then reestablish a new partition. So you're wiping out the old one and then rewriting a new one over it.
Can you do that from the operating system?
You have to do it
from the DOS box that you
might
run?
Well, you have to do it from the command prompt. So what you would do is reboot your system and hit the F8 function key while it says it's starting Windows. But right before it says it's starting up Windows, so you kind of have to time it right.
Don't you have to get fdisk then off of an auxiliary drive and not off the C drive?
I think it's still on the system.
Hmm.
Or you might have to boot off of the Windows CD. It's been a while since I've done it, but the website documents how to do that pretty well.
Okay. All right. Well, I had a couple other questions. One of them sort of deals with backing up, which is one of, you said, your topics.
Yep.
I always create a couple of directories of my own. I go back to DOS, obviously, in that terminology.
Yep.
And one of them is just for stuff that files that I create, and another one is just for files that I download. And I never use the one that comes. And I'm now running an XP system, and every time I download something, it says it wants to go to my recent documents or my documents dot period or something.
Right.
And I never want to use those. Is there any way I can rename those or set the system so it doesn't go there?
Well, the default ones that come with the operating system, you have to, some of those you can't be renamed. Some of them you can, but in general, where it says like documents and settings or some of the user directories or folders that are set up by the operating system, mm-hmm. those are intertwined with the user account, so you really can't change those. But you can change your preferences for where you want to download files. And you can change your preferences for where you want to save files. So, for example, if you use Word or if you use Excel or if you use other software, you need to look in the options or preferences and look for file locations or file settings, and you can modify those.
Yes, I've done it. I was hoping there was someplace I could do it system-wide so that it would stop making me have to go back and find the file folder that I wanted to use.
Yeah, it's more, you know, dependent upon the user software that you have versus the Windows.
Mm.
The other thing is, you know, saving, like, for example, Internet Explorer, you have favorites, and then Mozilla Firefox, you have bookmarks, is to periodically save those files and save them in a location where you want them to back them up.
Mm-hmm.
So in the event that you ever want to export them to another system, they're backed up and they're easy for you to locate. The other thing is, you know, there are a lot of users, Outlook Express, and that's a real danger area because a lot of people don't realize that Microsoft really saves the inbox and all the email folders in this very long subdirectory location, and it's very easy to change, and you have to go again into tools and options, and then under maintenance there's a folder location, and that's where you put in the new folder location. So for example, I have it set up to be a data folder, and then within data I call it, you know, Outlook or email, and I establish that. And then once you make that, you have to set up the folder first. Once the folder is set up, you exit the software, and then when you start up again, it copies all the files in their email system for Outlook Express into this new location, so then you can easily back it up.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I think I did that because I see I do have it in a different location back it up from.
But you have to make sure you create it first, and then go into Outlook, point to it, and then get out of Outlook because it won't make the change until you restart Outlook Express again.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of, you know, backing up stuff, you made a good point about creating a couple of folders that you use that you know where things are. So, for example, I create a folder called Data and put a lot of separate folders, you know, constantly adding folders there for all my different data files. And even within those data files, if I'm working on different projects, you know, based on year or season or anything, you can just point to that data folder, and that's all you need to back up is everything within it, and all your data files are covered. The other thing that I also do is anything that I download, I point to a folder I call Downloads. Now, the newer versions of Windows call them My Downloads, but again, it's within Documents and Settings, and it's another layer below. I like to have it so it's just one layer below what they call the root directory or the main, you know, drive settings. So it's just called Downloads, and I go to that, and, you know, if I downloaded a recent update, you know, I can go find it after it's, you know, 50 meg download or whatever it might be, you know. And you kind of set it and forget it, and just makes it easier to locate things. The problem a lot of people have is when they're downloading files and they're not comfortable with, number one, downloading, and then it's like, well, where did I put it?
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're consistent, it just makes it a lot easier, you know, to manage things. And then, of course, as things get older, you're just like, oh, this, I don't need this anymore. You delete it.
Delete it. You bet. Thanks for calling, Jared. Appreciate your call. Lots of callers online here. Let's go to Ray in Wausau. Ray, hi to you.
Good morning, Larry and Peter.
Morning.
Hi.
Hey, on XP, I've got with my desktop up, on the bottom, the what I call a taskbar or whatever, that little blue bar on the bottom,
right,
is double the normal height, and I don't know what I did to get that.
Well, real easy to fix. What you do is, I I came across this on someone's desktop. I think it was like Friday. What you do is you click and hold your mouse on it. You use your left mouse button. So okay. Click and hold it, and then just you can pull it down, and it'll compact it back down.
I've tried that.
You might have to right mouse click and unlock the bar. Maybe somebody locked it on you.
Okay, check for unlock.
Yeah. And the other thing is you could actually grab that bar and then move it to your right or move it to your left or put it up on top. So it's not necessarily everyone's preference to keep it on the bottom.
Yep.
Okay, we'll give it a whirl.
All right, Ray.
Thank you.
Yep, good luck.
Thanks for calling. Vosa in Wausau, thank you very much. Whoops, just a second here. I made a little mistake here, so now I think I've got that fixed with the computer. Okay, Vosa, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, question I have, our computer is 5 years old, and
hey,
we're about to change it.
You might want to turn your radio down behind.
Meanwhile, the problem is, like, every time we start it, the mouse freezes on us. So unless we restart the computer or, put it on sleep for 2 seconds and then, wake it up again, it won't work. So is it the mouse the problem or is it the computer, the processor?
I would try reloading the device driver for the mouse if it's possible. Otherwise, I would try a different mouse and see if it fixes it. I had a recent problem with the laptop that I own where the slide pad that's built in.
You said reloading the mouse?
No. Can you turn down your radio, ma'am? It's causing some confusion here. We're hearing
an echo.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Sorry about that.
Okay. Yeah. There's what's called when hardware talks to each other. For example, the computer trying to talk to the mouse and what's called handshaking. There's what's called a device driver that's loaded for the mouse to communicate with the computer system.
Oh.
Sometimes that develops a problem. For whatever reason, there's a glitch, and you need to reinstall it. So that's one possibility.
Okay.
The other one is the mouse device itself is fairly inexpensive. I've seen optical mice for like $10. Sometimes sometimes you even get rebates and get them for free. So you just have to look, find a place. There's Office Depot, Office Max, Target, Walmart. They all have those. But I would get an optical mouse. I wouldn't get one with a little ball underneath because that's just more problems. But anyhow, so those are the two things that I would do.
Okay, thank you so much. I just sure if it's the mouse, I have no problem buying it, but I thought maybe something in the computer is, not working right.
Well, that's why
Well, like I said, recently I had a problem with a laptop, and the mouse device or the pointing device is actually a slide pad. So what I did was I took a USB mouse from another system and just plugged it in. And I haven't even bothered troubleshooting whether or not to mess with the device driver. I just said, okay, I need to use it, and the pointer doesn't work. So I just grabbed another mouse, put it in, and it worked.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Brenda in Appleton, we'll go to you next. Hi, Brenda.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about my system. It's older, 5 years old, and when I switch from window to window, the previous window kind of goes blank, and the framework of it stays there, and then it eventually disappears, and then the next window comes up. And it seems like the system's running really slowly.
Mm-hmm.
I've only got. Like 30% of my disk is filled. I've got a lot of open space. I do my regular scan disk thing, and I clean disk. I clean the disk. I do my defrag. I do all that stuff that the book says to do. And as it's gotten older, this problem is just keeps getting more and more annoying. I was wondering if you knew what that could be.
Do you? Which version of Windows are you using?
XP.
Okay. Do you have a lot of little pictures in the lower right corner of your system when it starts up? A lot of little icons, little pictures in the lower?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Okay. Those are applications that you've probably installed over time that insist upon being, you know, there at your beck and call, but what happens is they use up system resources,
okay.
system memory.
All right.
And it sounds to me like the symptoms that you're describing where things are slow and the screen kind of is like painting itself really slow or,
mm-hmm.
you know, lags, is that those applications are getting in the way.
Okay.
So, and it's, you know, you said you're doing the scan disk defrag.
Yep.
And you had about 30% of your hard drive being used, so that sounds pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple things that I would do, and just to make sure, and I've mentioned this before in the air, is if you haven't done this already, Windows by default assigns a certain amount of hard drive space just to be used for the operating system.
Okay.
So if you right-mouse click on your recycle bin, click on click on properties, You want to resize the hard drive down to about 1% of your hard drive for the recycle bin. It comes as a default of 10%.
Okay.
So, for example, if you had a 10-gig hard drive, 1 gig was being assigned for the recycle bin. See, even though you thought you might be using 30% of your hard drive, if 10% of it was being allocated for the recycle bin, tack that amount onto mm-hmm. whatever hard drive space you're already using.
All right.
The other thing is you're using Windows XP, so a system restore is the same thing, so but actually assigns more. It assigns 12%.
Uh-huh.
So,
oh, God.
So,
I've done that, too. I've done system restore.
Yeah,
like
it's very handy, but you don't need to use 12% of your hard drive to allocate for it. So if you click
okay.
on start, click on programs, click on accessories, and then click on system tools. And it sounds like you're familiar with where the system tools are because that's where
uh-huh.
disk defrag is and
yeah.
Cleanup and so forth, is to click on system restore. And then there's a little link on the lower left side, not at the very bottom. It says system restore settings. And if you click on that, you want to change that number from 12% to probably 1% or maybe 2%. So
okay.
that'll shrink. So that frees up some hard drive space. And the reason that's important is because your computer is using swap space on your hard drive along with the memory in your computer, the RAM, to have applications load in and out of memory. And it just works. That's the way Linux works, Unix works. Apple works, Windows work, all the computers work that way. They work with the hard drive and swap things in and out of memory. Some do it better than others. But
okay.
in the case of Windows, it's important to just get rid of that tied up space. And then
right.
and then what I would do is on the Infostar.com website, if you click on the tips page, and if you look for Windows Startup, I forget which number it is. I don't have it memorized. I just know it's there. But there are a number of resources that I've linked to and online databases which will explain what some of those things mean that are in your startup. But what you need to do is click on Start, click on Run, type in msconfig, hit Enter, and then go to the Startup tab. And there will be a whole bunch of boxes that are checked off. Now, I'm not saying to uncheck all of them. Sometimes, you know, write down the ones that are checked off. And then what you can do is you can go back one by one and see what program loads in your system tray and whether
okay.
or not you want that.
Yeah.
So, for example, okay. a popular program for changing desktop graphics, I think, is called WebShots. Well, do you want WebShots there all the time, or do you want to just like go there when you want to? Well, if you want it there all the time, that's something you would load in your system tray. But if you want to do it just when you think of it, then that's not something you want occupying and using system resources to eventually slow down your computer.
Okay.
So on the tips page, that Windows Startup Tips is going to have a lot of good information. So, you know, I would highly recommend going through it slowly, reading it. And, you know, when you make changes, write them down, what they were and what you're going to, so that you can always get back to the way you were.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant with us today. I'm Larry Mueller. Keisha Mabra, our on-air producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking computers today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, Larry Mueller here. You can join in. I think we have an open line or two at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in Madison at 263-1890. And by the way, you can also email us at talk@wpr.org. And Carl in Central Mexico? Carl, are you really in Central?
Yeah, I'm listening to you via the internet.
Cool.
Are you using the internet to call us?
No, I'm not. That's why it cost me $1 a minute to call you guys and wait on hold.
Okay.
I'm going to rattle off a few suggestions here, and your guest can elaborate on them.
Okay.
As far as getting things running faster, a lot of programs do not, just like little children, they do not play nice sharing memory. A good thing to put on your computer would be something such as RAM idle, which you can find on the internet free, and it'll make them share, make those programs share, and then also make sure you have your antivirus up to date. It doesn't do any good if it's not up to date. And then Spybot, get rid of that spy software. That'll make you run slower too. And one thing that many people don't realize, if you're fragmented on your hard drive, your files, about 3%, that will bring your speed down 50%. So keep it defragged. XP doesn't have that problem so much as the older ones, but it's still a good idea. Keep it defragged and keep those spies out. Just the other day, I took 100 spy programs out of somebody's computer, and you can about imagine how slow it was there with 100 spies in the background.
Oh, yeah.
But I use SpyBot,
yep.
And people should be very careful when they download it free off the internet.
Yep.
Do not get something that looks like SpyBot. Get SpyBot. There's actually an illegal copy of SpyBot that's actually spyware, and it makes you think you're running SpyBot. You're
yep.
not. But the one thing to remember, SpyBot does not get automatic updates. You must do everything manually. It's an antivirus usually does an automatic update, and so you. But you must do it manually. Otherwise, it's not going to do you any good if you're not up to date. Of course, just like the antivirus. And then, as far as having a special folder to put your stuff in, real great idea. Going further is to have a separate partition for your data. A separate partition, and it'll run faster. Just keep it so that way your data and your programs are not intermingling at all. On that note of not intermingling at all, these days used to be a hell to install Linux. Right now, I run Ubuntu Linux, and with Linux, your user directory, all of your user information, your favorites or whatever you want to call them, any data you have for you is in that separate directory. So if you want to reload your operating system and everything, just redesignate it the same thing, and the reinstall does not touch your data. Also, if you have that separate partition for under Windows, you can do a reinstall of Windows and just say, hey, only my operating partition. Do not touch my data partition and reinstall. And so your Windows stuff would be safe too. But hardware-wise, the best thing you can do with any operating system, any computer at all, is more memory. And everyone out there listening should remember that a lot of the resellers of computers, the outlets, they sell the minimum requirement. Remember, Windows and other operating systems, they give a recommendation of the minimum, but you should go for the optimum, what they recommend, not for their minimum, and that will make you run a lot faster. I've got a gig of memory in my computer, and I can put more in yet on the computer, but that really helped.
Carl? Thank you.
Okay, well, I hope that I hope your guest can elaborate on that. I was trying to do it fast here.
Okay, Carl, thank you for calling all
Thanks,
the way
Carl.
From Central Mexico, Old Mexico.
Yeah. Numerous times, you know, sometimes hard to hit on all things, but many times mentioned about a minimum a gig of RAM. Mm-hmm. Almost every operating system I know likes to have that. Depending upon the computer system, sometimes it makes sense to actually buy different chips in terms of whether or not to go with 1 or 2 gigs of memory based on the configuration or how the main board accepts memory. Sometimes you don't have a choice. Sometimes you may only have 2 slots and you have 512 occupied and you need to add another 512. We talked about using Blark Advisor over the years to help you analyze what's actually in your system, you know, versions of software, security, you know, whether or not your system is secure. The spyware, we talked about SpyBot, MS Defender by Windows, which it's interesting. They say they allow you 2 free incident calls. I've never tried to deal with them for an incident. But what's nice about the MS Defender is it works for Windows, XP, and higher operating systems that they've released, is that it does its own updates versus something like SpyBot, where, you know, if you're not real comfortable with doing updates and downloads, you have to, you know where to click on in the software, look for it, check for updates, and, you know, then install it. One of the things that can be a little bit daunting for SpyBot is I won't say recent addition, but something they call T-Timer, which allows you to have control over what changes settings in the system registry or the Windows registry. But you have to really pay attention to whether or not you want to allow or block those changes. And I actually had to remove that from my son's system because I couldn't make any changes, and it was blocking my changes. So I actually removed SpyBot so I could make some fixes to it because his system was slowing down, and he has way too much horsepower for it to be a slow system because I made sure of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, partitioning the hard drive, you know, most of the systems that are delivered are usually come with one, and you can get partitioning software. But, you know, if you answer the question wrong way or you press the wrong button or click on the wrong thing and you're not really sure, you know, that's where you run into problems and you have to kind of do it over. So, you know, you just have to do some of those things with caution, but mm-hmm. they're valid and they work. The other operating system you mentioned, I actually have a link to that through the top 10 websites and some other Linux operating systems. Dell is elected to actually ship, if you call it Ubuntu or
mm-hmm.
Ubuntu or however, I don't know its origins in turn. There's probably a little story about the origins on its website about the naming of the product, but there are other viable operating systems out there. It's interesting that Dell has actually elected to ship those. You know, we'll see how things move on.
Thanks again for calling. Appreciate the call very much. Christine in Stoughton, it's your turn. Hi, Christine.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Peter.
Hi.
I'm hoping you can help me today. I've gotten a lot of great tips from you over the years, and hoping I can describe the problem here well enough.
Okay.
I have a Dell computer, and I have Windows 98. We've had this system since about 99, and you know, it's old, but it's working fine.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, though, in the last week, I cannot open any of my word processing software. So if I try to go from the start menu to open a new document or open an existing document, I get to a point where I click on a file, and it drags on for a long time and then gives me some kind of message that it can't open it up. I've tried going in through Start into the documents meant, you know, themselves, mm-hmm. and I can't pull it up. I feel like there's something taking up either memory or something that's engaged that I can't get at to close to get these documents to open.
What are you using for word processing?
It's just Microsoft Word.
Okay. So if you independently using like Windows Explorer locate a document file and click on it, it will not launch Word and try to open it up? Or it'll try to launch Word, but it says it can't open the file?
Right. If I go in through, if I try to open a new document and mm-hmm. it doesn't, it just grinds to a halt. Mm-hmm. And then it'll just stall the system, so then I'll Control-Alt-Delete to try to get it to shut down. And
right.
then I'll get the white box that says mm-hmm. we're dangerously low on resources.
Oh.
And I thought, oh, no, that's not good.
Mm-hmm.
So if I get an email and I try to open a document there, I haven't been able to do it there either.
Any other problems with any other software, or is it just mainly the Word application?
You know, I haven't had any call to really go into any of our spreadsheet or anything uh-huh. like that to check that out. The internet connection is working fine.
Okay. So it's actually reading and writing files to the hard drive with other applications. I mean, that's what... When you're browsing the web, you're actually loading files. When you load a web page, it actually writes temporary files onto your hard drive.
Okay.
So that page is actually cached or put into your system's memory. And when you clean up temporary internet files, those are the files that get deleted off your system. And what a lot of people don't realize is like a little graphic icon, a little tiny picture...
Mm-hmm.
actually takes up a pretty significant amount of space compared to its size because it's a file.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, if you're loading a web page that's got a dozen pictures on it, it's the web page plus a dozen pictures, so that's actually 13 files.
My kids are on the, you know, internet quite mm-hmm. a bit looking at YouTube and stuff. So I do a disk cleanup and try
okay.
to get rid of those temporary files
Good.
Almost every day.
All right.
I've tried shutting it down, restarting it.
Sure.
I just can't figure out how to get to it.
Have you tried to do you have the original the Word? Have you tried?
Probably do, yeah.
Have you tried reinstalling it?
No, I have not.
Okay. I would, by reinstalling it, you're not going to hurt anything that... any of your data files.
Okay.
It has no effect on your data files at all, but I would always make sure that you're backing those up.
Okay.
But what I would do is I would uninstall Microsoft Word. Do you have Office, or is it just Word that you have? You mentioned spreadsheets. Excel?
I have, I'm just looking under here, programs. So we have mm-hmm. the Word is separate from... the database and spreadsheet software.
Right. I think, if I remember, do you have is it Microsoft Office 97?
It just on our program menu lists Microsoft Office tools, and then it lists Microsoft Works, and that's where the calendar, database, and spreadsheet are. And then it's got publishing 2000.
But you said, so you have Word and also Works?
Yes.
Correct. Okay. The earlier versions, you used to be able to do like a repair. I don't know if that's an option on the Microsoft Word that you have, but it's worth looking at. If you get the CD and you put it in,
okay,
that might be one of the options to reinstall or repair. And I would try that. The other thing is to just, you know, make sure that those files could actually be used by another system. Is, you know, to back them up, whether or not you burn a CD or you use a little USB flash drive, is take a couple of files and put it on another system and use, you know, another version of Word to actually open them up. I don't think you have a problem with the integrity of the data files or the documents. I think it's probably the application that something happened to it.
Okay.
There might be something that's conflicting with it. Which was going to lead me to one other point was, did you recently install anything where all of a sudden you noticed that things were going bad? Because I've had instances where I've installed software and things were working fine, and all of a sudden I've developed conflicts, and I'm like, well, that last thing's got to go because it's messing up my other stuff?
Not that I can think of, but my kids have some old software that they've gotten out and haven't used in a while.
How old are your kids?
They're 9 and 12.
Yeah, that's a dangerous age. I could tell you we had a 10-year-old nephew that came over, and my son's computer stopped working. And, you know, he was playing whatever games, and I didn't monitor him that closely. I'm like, I don't know, what could he do that would be so bad?
Yeah.
And then my 18-year-old goes, Dad, my computer doesn't work at all. I mean, it didn't work. Period.
Well, I thought, oh, is the system finally crashing that I can't open this one thing? So now I've been wanting, mm-hmm. I'm developing a workshop, so I'm trying to get into my files.
Right.
So now I'm doing my work and doing it as draft in mm-hmm. email just mm-hmm. to get it in somewhere.
Right.
So you're saying if I do the reinstall or the repair,
yeah.
my files will still be in there?
Yep, that's the first thing I would try. If that doesn't work, you know, email me off of my website, web1@infostar.com, and, you know, put in parentheses, you know, what you're having problems with, because then I'll, you know, just be, you know, aware to looking for it.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks, Christine.
Good luck.
Appreciate the call. Good luck to you. Peter Green,
I feel her pain.
Yes. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking computers and software today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison. Give us a call if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Mary in Racine, you are next. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have hopefully an easy question for you. All of a sudden, we were gone for 5 weeks this winter, and I totally turned off all the computers and everything in the house. And since we're back, I cannot keep my homepage on either. We have a laptop and a desktop. I cannot keep the homepage on either of my computers, and I can't figure out why.
So when you change the homepage, it won't stay changed?
No, it comes back. We have SBC Yahoo, mm-hmm. and if I put up a particular homepage, the next time I go back to the computer and you know, do my little icon to come up, mm-hmm. it just goes back to that Yahoo sign-in thing, you know, to have your new account and whatever.
Right.
And my homepage is gone again. I don't know what's happened since we were gone.
And you've told it to save it?
I've gone into the properties, or I can't remember right now. I'm not at home.
Yeah. Internet options. Tool.
Internet options,
right.
Exactly. And yep. tell it to save it, mm-hmm. and the next time we turn the computer on, it's mm-hmm. gone again.
Hmm. I know on my tips page, I'm trying to, they call it hijacking your homepage. And
okay.
there's actually a fix that Microsoft has posted for that.
Oh.
So it's one of the tips. So if you go to InfoStar.com, click on tips, and look. I think you could even do a search off of my homepage using the word hijack.
Okay.
But if you read through, you'll find it. I don't know which one it is. I don't know. I've got like 35 different tips up there, and you know, if you were to print them all out, I don't know if I'd waste paper on it, but because they're always up there.
Okay.
But that might be the way for you to fix the problem, because it sounds very similar. I haven't heard it in a while. It used to be a real popular thing for some of these spyware applications to do,
mm-hmm.
where they would hijack your homepage so you couldn't change it to what you wanted.
Yeah, I just don't get it. All of a sudden, it just
right.
won't stay there.
So, and Microsoft's got a fix posted for it. So,
okay.
again, if you have a problem with that, you know, shoot me an email at web1@infostar.com and see if I can come up with other suggestions. But I think that's probably the right one.
All
okay,
right.
One more quick one. My little icons in the left corner by start will not stay there. I can't drag them down and keep them in the little box next to start.
Okay.
You know, because normally when we would go onto the computer, you can just go down and hit the little icon and bring up your email or bring up your,
right.
you know, your start page or whatever.
Right.
And I can't drag them down there and keep them there. They keep popping back up on the desktop.
You might have the toolbar locked. If you right mouse click, you'll see a whole bunch of other options that you can make changes with.
Okay, so I want the toolbox lock.
Well, no, if you right mouse click on that,
right.
you'll see properties and you'll see some other options that you can make changes to, and one of them is to unlock it.
You want it unlocked?
Yeah.
Okay.
When you drag things to it and it doesn't change, it's because it's protecting it.
Okay.
So
very
it's
good.
Or being locked is another term. Mm-hmm.
All right.
So it depends on the software that you use. You know, when you look at things, some people call them options, others call them preferences, some call them properties. You know,
all right.
So I'm just giving you some options. You'll see, but you know that right mouse click can be magic to some people.
Oh, yeah. I do use it. I use it a lot. A lot of people don't know how to do it, but yes, I will check that out.
And it's interesting that in the Mac world they use it, but not as much.
Okay.
You know, am I right, Larry?
Yeah.
It's just not. They use it, but just not quite the same way.
Okay. Well, I do use it. That's not a problem.
Yeah.
But I will check that.
All right.
So, thank you so much.
Yep. You bet.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Mary. Thanks for calling. And Tyler in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Tyler.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I heard you talking earlier a little bit about Windows Vista, and I just got a new Dell notebook, new Dell Inspiron with Vista installed on it, but my school's IT department won't support Vista yet, and I have what I hope is, yeah, it's kind of inconvenient, really nothing supports Vista yet, but I hope it's a simple question, and it only comes up, really, it's an issue when I'm giving presentations from my laptop.
Okay.
When I put Vista in sleep mode, the laptop in sleep, and then wake the computer back up, the screen resolution comes up much lower than its, you know, optimized level. I keep it usually at the highest resolution, and the PowerPoints display better and things. But
right.
when it comes back up, you know, the icons are huge.
Right.
Everything's huge. And just going into the personalization menu and changing it back works, and I can change the resolution after that, but it always comes back up in a really poor resolution.
It might be because the hardware is waking up and, you know, first and not the operating system, and that's what the hardware defaults to.
Okay.
You know, if you know how to get into, I don't know if this is a setting you can actually change in the BIOS of your. You said it was a laptop, right?
Yeah,
because you're using it for PowerPoint. It might be an option in some of the newer portables where you could change that setting, but because that's what's waking up first.
Okay.
See that?
That's the problem.
Yeah.
The hardware is waking up, and then the operating system. And you probably do. You have it so it's locked, so you have to put in your user password.
Actually, no.
Okay. Yeah, you know what? I don't even know if that would matter. You'll have to see how to get into the BIOS settings, you know, for your laptop,
all right.
And take a look at some of the video options for, you know, what's built into your system. That might change. You know, you might be able to make a change there.
All right. And do you mind if I just ask you one more really short question?
Oh, go ahead.
Do you trust Windows Defender, the new Windows Defender, for spyware and adware removal?
Do I trust it? Well, you know, they did it. I haven't seen a recent study, but when Microsoft purchased, I forgot which company it was, and made it MS Defender, and it was compared to SpyBot and a number of other products out there, it did about a 60%, maybe a little bit higher, you know, cleanup job of spyware and versus some of the other products, which were less than 50%. I don't know its, you know, what its quote unquote reputation is right now, right at this point in time, because, you know, things are dynamic and always changing. But I would probably trust it more than most other programs out there.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
I've had good luck with it. And, you know, the SpyBot product, I used to use it a lot. I don't really use it now. And, you know, people, I'm not saying not to use it, but if you're not careful with what they've added on, which is called Tea Timer, it regulates what, you know, what can be changed in your Windows registry. And you just have to be really paying attention to that, because if you block something that you want, you got to go through some effort to get it back. So it's just a word of caution. I think MS Defender for most people is a little bit more of, you know, get in the car, turn the key, you know, and drive it, versus the SpyBot. You know, if you haven't driven a stick shift, well, you got to learn how to drive a stick shift, I guess, is the best way to compare the two. And there are other programs out there. I'm not endorsing one versus the other. I'm just saying, based on experience, that's how I would compare. One is an automatic, and the other one's a 5-speed. And if you haven't driven a 5-speed, then you got to learn how to do it.
Thanks, Tyler. Jerry in Whitewater, hi to you.
Yes, thanks a lot. I've got a couple of questions with a bulky email. I have some addresses. I can't send them an email. A little box comes up and says that person is not viable, or that email address is not viable.
Okay.
Also, today, I got back from good friend Damien saying that the message cannot be delivered, and I never sent it. Absolutely never, ever sent it. And I don't know what's going on.
Okay. What are you using for email? What software do you use?
Outlook Express.
Okay. One thing you need to make sure of, and this is a good policy for everyone, is to not have Outlook Express do a send-receive automatically when you start up. Because, you know, in the event that you get spyware or a Trojan or a virus or a worm on your system, it'll do these things behind the scene and you won't even know it. So by telling it to not do send and receive automatically upon startup, you get to witness anything it sends out. Okay? So that's one thing. It's possible that your email, if you want to call it, being hijacked from somebody else's computer that's infected by a virus, has used someone else's computer to say you've sent the email, and it's sending you the bounce backs for emails that have been sent out by somebody else using you as an alias.
That's what I thought.
And it's never really reached that destination. So that's one thing. The viable addresses, you know, I've seen these problems in so many different ways. One case I had to solve, I went back and I was looking at, we had a spam filter set up, you know, through our hosting service, and the teacher was sending her return address using all capitals, and that looks like spam. So the spam filter said, "You ain't coming through." So we could never receive email from that person. So, you know, I put the Sherlock Holmes on and figured that one out. Another one is sometimes people inadvertently put a space, or they put a punctuation in an email that they send to you in their return address, which is incorrect. And you're replying to their email address, but it's incorrect. And they don't even realize. I have people send me email from the show, and I can't reply to them because someone's put in their return address incorrectly, and I can never get back to them. No matter what I've tried, I try to figure it out, you know, within reason what it is, and it still won't go back. So, you have to check and make sure those email addresses are correct.
I know that one is for a fact, because I've sent it before.
Okay. And the other thing is, it's not absolute in that there could be a problem with their mailbox provider, their internet service provider, their spam filter. So there are those components of the equation that you have to deal with. Another one is to go through a totally independent system. And what I use a lot is called Mail2Web, M-A-I-L, the number 2, and then W-E-B.com. And I'll log into my email that way. And then what you can do is send the email through their service, So you're not even going to your computer, but you're sending the mail through their service online to, you know, the recipient and see if you've eliminated the problem. Because then you could say, okay, the problem is on my system and not, you know, through the provider. So those are just some of the things, you know, you can do to track it down. But just remember, there's all these little variables involved.
Right.
There are other services. There are other mailbox, post office managers, you know, they're electronic. There are spam filters. There are people that are keying in addresses that you have no control over. And then there are other systems that are, you know, essentially hijacked your email from, you know, an address book and now are sending out emails on your behalf, even though you have nothing to do with it.
Oh, gosh.
Kind of frightening.
Yeah. Thanks, Jerry, for calling. Appreciate it. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking personal computers and software issues with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Pleased to have you listening in. And, Pete, this time of the program, you always like to go through a top 10 list. And what have you got for us today?
Okay, first, if you go to InfoStar.com, click on current top 10 or the archives and scroll down to today's date, you'll get to this list. This first one is called Intellius. Intellius.com. It's a search resource for access to public records and background checks. So if you need that kind of information, it's a pretty handy resource. This one we mentioned on the air with a caller from, was it Central Mexico?
Mm-hmm.
Ubuntu, UBUNTU.com. It's a Linux-based operating system that Dell has chosen to ship with their PCs if you make that choice. And I put up a few more Linux-based operating systems that have been out there for quite some time as well. What would it be complete without mentioning the iPhone, which was released on Friday? And before the show, I had a chance to listen to CNBC and some of the reactions about the iPhone craze. Anyhow, iPhone.com, owned by Apple. It's their interactive website about the new iPhone and already talking about the next version and, you know, price points and things like that. I think it starts at like $4.99. But a lot of information there. This next one, I've had the recent experience of using a Mac to do my design work, where I design catalogs and sell sheets and so forth. And I've had to change, not had to, but changed, I should say, to a new software product that Adobe sells, and they've had it out there quite a while, and it's called InDesign, and there's a website called InDesignSecrets.com that's a resource that covers the version for both the Apple Mac and the Windows version. Number five is called fan-sites.org. And if you're looking for fans, this has got 900 plus. It hosts site for super fans. So people that put up fan sites for movies, celebrities, TV shows, and so forth, would be an interesting place to look for those. This next one is an online conversion calculator called Calculate Me. So you can use it for a wide variety of conversions. Number seven. I was looking to see what Microsoft was providing for Macintosh in terms of downloads for, you know, Office products, support, and so forth. And I came across this Mactopia.com, and it's a Microsoft resource for downloading whatever products they have available for the Apple Mac environment. Number eight, Larry, you emailed me about this, and you know, you mentioned about backups, Twango. Mm. Someone emailed you about this free service, and you can send files up to 100 meg in size. You can upload, share photos, videos, audio files, and so forth. If you also go to my InfoStar.com Virus Info Center page, something like this resource and the ones I list for backups could be used for, you know, on an online backup resource where you can actually schedule backups to be uploaded to an offsite, you know, web resource. Security, I've been asked about that. I mean, you have security in terms of your logging in for your account, whether or not they encrypt the files that are up there. I don't know all the details for all the different service providers, so you would have to look into that. Harry Potter, this month.
Yep,
it's big. It's big, Larry. It's bigger than you and I.
The last one.
Seventh book. You know, is Harry going to be alive or is he going to be killed off? Who else is going to be killed? Larry, don't you know these things?
I don't know these things.
Are you speculating?
I have thought about it.
So, fifth movie. I mean, this stuff is almost unprecedented. What, you know? So, anyhow, if you want to know what's going on with that stuff, MuggleNet, MuggleNet.com. And I've linked to some other resources out there. Leaky Cauldron and others. And then for Vista, there's itsvista.com. ITISVista.com is a resource to help get you going on Vista. And I also I put up a table on my tips page. It's the first, very first tip, and it's a digital storage table for you to figure out based on, for typically for cameras. You know, if you have a 5-megapixel camera or a 7-megapixel camera, you know, what size storage card do you buy? You know, like an SD card or an XD card. You know, how big a card do you buy and how many pictures can you store at that megapixel size? So I've got a table posted there to, you know, help you figure that out.
Lots of good stuff there.
Usually don't know that stuff, but this will make it easier.
Let's go to Jim in Appleton now. Jim, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Listen, I have a Windows XP, and for my backups, I use external disk drives.
Okay.
Now, I've got AT&T Online Protection and Adware, and I run Adware every night, you know, to scan a computer.
Right.
And then I run the other one at least twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I noticed it won't do, it won't scan the other disks that I have, the external disk drives. How do I get something, or how do I do that?
You might have to point it to it to, you know, change the preferences or update the settings to click on the drive to include it as part of that scan.
Do I have to have all the drives on?
Yeah, they would have to be on. They'd have to be acknowledged by, typically, you click on My Computer
right. When
you're looking for all the drives and what you have access to. So that would have to be attached and on so it could be recognized.
Okay.
Yep.
It does show when I do that, but how do I get it to scan them?
There might be a setting where you have to tell it to include it in the scan.
Okay.
So you'll just have to kind of pry around and see where those changes need to be made.
Where do I make that at?
I'm not sure in that software. Sometimes, usually they allow you, if it's a full version of software, to make those changes. If you're using what are called shareware or free versions, sometimes some of the features that they don't allow you to have is to scan network drives or scan other drives than just your primary hard drive that's hooked
that
up.
That wouldn't be in the Adware because I was given that as a freebie.
Right.
Yep.
Won't be in the online support. It's, I can go into the utilities and defrag and do all kinds of stuff.
Right.
Would I find it there?
Possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to have to look around a little bit.
Yeah, just kind of have to poke around and see where those drive settings are and where you can make the changes to. So one is for, you know, making changes to what is scanned on your computer, and the other one is making sure it's saving or acknowledging, you know, that drive as part of your system. Sometimes you can do it and sometimes you can't. Depends on the version.
Good luck. Thanks for calling, Jim. Tom in Plain, Wisconsin is next. Hi, Tom.
Hello. How are you today?
Good.
Hi. Great. I've got a couple questions. I'm looking at purchasing a Mac. I have a G4 right now
okay.
that I use strictly for photography and editing and that type of work.
Right.
I was looking at the minis. Mm-hmm. They have a 1.6 gig or whatever and a 1.83 mini. And I just wondered if those were, that was a computer that would, that I could be fine with, you know, for the photo work that I do.
What and, kind of, what size photos do you have?
Well, I shoot an XT, and they're pretty high meg photos.
Well, I'll tell you, you'd probably really love a Mac Pro. Because I use a lot of graphics on a Mac Pro that I have with the Woodcrest dual processors and 1 gig of RAM and a 250 gig internal hard drive, and the thing just smokes. I mean,
really?
It's just really fast. And I put a 22-inch wide flat screen on it.
Yep.
So, you know, working with images is just, you know. And when you say save, it's like, you know, in 1 second it saves a file.
Well, the one I'm using now, I go through about 10 photos and she just kicks off and I lose everything that I did.
Yeah.
To but yeah. You can get, you know, like 2 gigs of memory on those minis.
Right. Well, you can get, I think, up to 16 in the Mac Pros. So, you know, I'm trying to look for an excuse to add more memory to the Mac, and I haven't found one yet.
Sure.
The other thing I was going to mention, and I was telling Larry before the show, another option for backups that I use is a product called Mirror, M-I-R-R-A, by Seagate. And they just came out with a Mac version of their software. And what I have is a network of computers, and it's a backup hard drive server. And all the workstations have all the files that are changing. I tell that backup server, the Mirror, to monitor and back up those files whenever anyone is logged in and makes a change to their documents. Those files are automatically backed up, and they've now got a Mac version of their software. And I did that for the Mac, and I was like, oh, thank you, because that makes that a lot easier. And, you know, they're a little bit more expensive, but I lucked out and was able to buy a few of them off of eBay. So you got to kind of pick your moment. But I'll give you an example of 500 or 750 gig version. I'm sure the price point on that is about 500 at retail. And if you know anything about external hard drives, I picked up, I don't know if I pronounce this correctly, a LaCie external 500 gig drive for about $120 off of buy.com for making backups as well. So the Mirror is more expensive, but you know, that set it and forget it kind of thing, that's what that lends itself to. And that's kind of nice when, you know, you're working with big files and you want a little bit of peace of mind that, you know, when you're done and you walk away that your thing's covered. And one other feature is you can actually give people access to your files on the Mirror.com, through the Mirror.com website with secure login. So if you need to access your computer backup files on the road, you have a way to actually getting your data files through another source.
Is it possible, one last question, to be able to have a database program through like a Windows on that Mac also?
You have a couple options. You got Boot Camp. So if you want to run a Windows, I set up, this is funny, I set up Parallels for the desktop, which works great. You know, run XP Professional. I think there's like an interactive, it doesn't run DirectX, so you can't run applications that run DirectX. But I believe Boot Camp from Mac, you could actually do that. But Parallels for the desktop, you don't have to reboot your machine, and you can start Windows XP in an entirely separate section, you know, on the same partition on your hard drive, which, of course, you have to map off or partition off some hard drive space.
Right.
And I know numerous people are using the application for doing that, but I have a PC in front of me and a Mac behind me, or a Mac in front of me and a PC behind me, so I'm using two computers, and I have Parallels for the desktop on the Mac, but I just use the Mac. So when I'm, you know, I haven't found the excuse to make the changeover, so I'm running the PC on the Mac, but you can do it, and it works quite well.
So as that Mini's concerned, they do have a dual core processing or whatever now.
Right.
You still think that...
You might, you know, you got other things that you need to factor in. You've got a graphics card. You got a different kind of processor. You're probably going to want to go out there and, you know, check. I have a link to a number of Mac pages through Infostar.com. You know, if you go to the main page and then click on Apple Resources, there's Mackinen.com. But what I'm trying to point out is that you might want to check out some resources out there that review the different iMacs and the Mac Pro in terms of configuration and speed, because you've got the graphics processor and the memory for the video that's going to be different. You've got the CPU that's different. The speed of the memory chips is going to be different. The upgradability of the system, I mean, you have a G4, so that system is more upgradable than, you know, another Mac that was sold at a lower level at that point in time. So, you know, you might forego some of the upgradability with the lower Mac. It might not be quite as fast, but it might be attractive price-wise. But, you know, you got to, you know, are
lots
you buying
of to think
are
about.
You buying it for a year or are you buying it for, you know, a few years?
Well, you know, definitely more than a year.
Right.
You know, so... You know, and I have looked at the 22-inch monitor.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I'm not using an Apple product for the monitor. I'm just using, you know, a PC monitor. You don't need the $900, $1,000 monitor. You can get one for under $300, you know, for 22-inch wide. So.
Yep, and I have found that. My printing company uses those minis, one of them, on one of the presses, and they tell me how fast it is, and it really works well. And I mean, I probably got 1,000 photos in my archives right now just for the last year and what I've done this year to this point. You know, I'm just trying to find a better way to
test drive them. You know, I know CompUSA has Apples on hand. You know, take the time and drive to one of the store. I know there are Apple stores out there. I know Minnesota. I don't know if we have one in Wisconsin yet, or maybe we do. Don't we have one?
A new Apple store in Madison.
Yeah. So, you know, bring in your pictures and, you know.
Give it a shot.
Yeah. Test drive it.
Thanks for calling. We had someone wondered about, speaking of Macs, Larry and Rudolph has Macs and has difficulty getting CDs to burn on an eMac or iMac. Any suggestions on getting the right blank CDs?
Well, one with, you know, a lot of people don't realize this is you got to be careful with CDs. Number one, you know, if it's all coming from the same batch of CDs, is the media the problem? So, you know, you're placing it near magnets or you're not treating it kindly and not keeping it, you know, in a nice, comfortable environment. You know, are they getting scratched and so forth before you're rubbing them on the table before you put them in the drive. So, and then the other one is, you know, making sure that the CD drive itself is not the problem. Can you read from the CD and actually, you know, get files off of it? Because that's usually an indication if you can't do that, you're probably not going to be able to write with it as well. And then another option is just getting an external drive to replace it. And external drives are not very expensive. You know, like I mentioned, the hard drive, you know, 500 gig hard drive, they have external CDs, external really you want to buy a DVD burner with CD read-write capability. So that's another option too.
And Sissy emailed us and said, my Dell Inspiron 700 notebook monitor just went dead suddenly. I can vaguely see the screen, but I am able to use an external monitor. Is it possible the backlight of the monitor goes off, or do I need a new monitor?
Most of the cases I've seen where the display has a problem and you're lucky enough to think about hooking up that external monitor, the first thing I do is always back up my data files because I wonder how much longer, you know, it's going to be with me. So making sure you're doing the backups on a regular basis with that is very important. Most of the time when those go, it's a very expensive fix. And unless you're technophobe with fixing that stuff, and it's not covered under warranty, it's usually time to look for an alternative laptop. And I was mentioning, Larry, some of the laptop prices and configurations that I saw this past weekend were
cheap.
It's just amazing how they keep coming down in price. I think within the year, we're probably going to be seeing sub-$300 laptops that, you know, versus computers that people are using 3-4 years ago are going to say, well, you know, that's what I need now. Because the speed, the storage, the networking just keeps changing and getting better.
Thomas and Dousman, hello.
Hi, Larry.
Hi.
I have a question about why can't you buy something to get the internet, just the internet, none of those other things? Why can't you just have a laptop that just has the internet?
There are some internet appliances out there. I call them internet or net appliances.
Uh-huh.
And they just haven't been real successful.
Well,
and you know, it's a marketing thing. And, you know, I would agree with you. I would love to have just an internet appliance sitting in my kitchen that gives me access to browse the web. And I could check my emails through the web, so I don't really need an email client. And I was going to mention, you know, you don't even have to have your own computer to get access to email. You just need access to a computer.
Right.
You can set up a Gmail account, a Hotmail account, Yahoo Mail, whatever. And you can do online banking. You can check your cell phone account and on and on. And, but you know, they just haven't caught on.
Yeah.
You didn't anywhere I could get one?
You know, if you probably type in net appliance or internet appliance, you'll probably find some online that might direct you to whether or not it's the company's site or, mm-hmm. you know, a provider, you know, an online seller that
yep.
sells them.
Never know, but the price could be more expensive.
You know, to produce a net appliance with a monitor, a flat screen monitor, and the system board and everything else, they're like, oh, I just might as well, you know, build a little PC laptop or something.
Yeah.
But no, it would be great. I would just put one right on my kitchen table.
Thanks for calling, and we're out of time. If a person has tried several mice and the mouse is always frozen in 10 seconds.
Well, one is if you're always plugging it to the same port, then the port could be the problem. I would be looking at, you know, an alternative port or a different kind of interface so it's not the same, you know,
yep.
whether it's USB or the mouse serial, you know, try something actually different.
Thanks, Pete. Thanks a lot. You'll be back in a month. We'll do this again.
Yep.
Thank you. Peter
Thanks.
Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. And thank you for listening. We'll talk waste electronic recycling, by the way, tomorrow on the program. So we'll look forward to that. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.